It's almost going to fall for Martinez. Antonelli trying to get there. Martinez finishes to give away the man.
It's an absolute peach from the Paraguayan Miguel Almirón.
Atlanta United, in just their second year of existence, have won MLS Cup.
Ojo con la...
So Patrick, I'm losing my mind. The reaction to this game has been insane.
Yeah.
Dude, I am freaking out. I want to get right into it because, like, holy crap, y'all. All right.
I love this.
Final post shot XG in this game. 1.73 to 0. 1.73 to 0. And I got to go on the goddamn internet and read about how the team would have scored if Frank DeBoer was in charge.
Not good enough.
I swear to God.
Yeah.
Freaking out.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes the ball doesn't go your way. Sometimes, as Jeff Lorenowitz once said, it's just the way the cookie crumbles, my friend.
He did say that. I remember that. I was there. We were all there. God, man. Okay.
Yeah.
Like... I don't want to make this a whole thing about, like, I'm going to write something about Frank DeBoer. I'm tired of seeing this. I'm tired of it.
Tell me more about how Frank DeBoer ties into this.
Sure. People have been talking about Gonzalo Pineda's record in particular, mm-hmm. and using mm-hmm. this as a major point that there should be some kind of change at manager, right? And being like, right. Oh, well, everyone hated Frank DeBoer or whatever. And he won us two trophies. To clarify on the two trophies thing, one was a scrimmage game.
Yeah, right.
Right? Where Jeff Lorenowitz accidentally scored the goal of his
life.
It was
literally their preseason. It was literally Club America's preseason.
Two, the U.S. Open Cup, they beat the last place team in the Eastern Conference, the second to last place team in the Eastern Conference, two USL teams, if I remember right.
Yep.
And then they beat a halfway decent Minnesota side coming off some of the worst expansion seasons of all time in MLS. Yeah. That was the whole run. Can we please stop talking about the trophies? That being said, this is all being tied into like something that that Gonzalo Pineda did something wrong tactically in this game, or is doing something wrong in general when the team keeps creating chances, when the team keeps keeping out chances, when the team leads the league in goals added differential in MLS, leads MLS in goals added differential, and people are mad now because the team is getting a road point. They should have won, except Chris Brady stood on his head and saved 1.73 post-shot XG worth of chances.
Yeah, I thought the team played well. I guess you agree. I think you agree. I mean, I understand the frustration. I really do. But it's a long season, you know? And it's funny to think about that Frank DeBoer year because you remember... they were having a great year points-wise that May, but the games were all just terrible to watch. They were winning 1-0, seemed like, every game at home. But it was so could you really complain about it? Because they're getting the results, and of course, things kind of, you know, as it tends to do in this sport especially, water kind of found its level. They did start to really struggle as that summer wore on, and then we kind of know that they had that whole change and where Frank DeBoer was kind of... ousted from the tactical aspect of the team, and they just kind of were doing their own thing and turned themselves around. But yeah, but the point being is that even in that, at that point, it was kind of the opposite where things were going well in the standings, even though you could kind of sense that it wasn't all hunky dory.
2019 Atlanta United, that team had Joseph Martinez, the best striker probably in MLS history at that point. They had the best midfielder in MLS history and Darlington Nagby. They had one of the best wingers of the TAM era. Shout out to Toyota Football. One of the best wingers of the TAM era and Teodoro Villalba. And he benched him. So like that, yeah, I guess that didn't really matter. Right. Michael Parker is one of the best center backs in all time of all MLS history. Maybe the best. There's an argument for it. Leandro Gonzalez Perez had all these incredible players. That team finished with 58 points. Last year's team started Mateus Gatdang Hoseto for a year because there were no better options and still got 51 points. Losing my mind.
let me ask you this, and I'm just going to kind of play devil's advocate here, although this one did kind of get me a little, my ears perked a little bit, or my eyebrow raised a little bit when I heard it last week, which was this talking point that I think Yorgos Yakimakis brought up, and I apologize because I wasn't there, but he brought it up about, you know, kind of the film reviews they'd had the previous week, and it was a lot of kind of, you know, taking accountability, and the coaches really holding the players more accountable maybe than they had been. It just overall, that's all putting it nicely. I think just in general, it sounded like it was a harsher kind of week of criticism from the coaches towards the players, and it seemed like Yako liked that. He appreciated that. And he felt like that was needed, which is kind of to me, that's kind of like a Joseph mentality. You know, we've kind of talked about them being similar in that respect, just kind of in the way that they carry themselves and what they want out of the coach and holding them to high standards. And, you know, that did get me thinking like, okay, well, maybe like Yako at least is potentially one who's maybe not totally cool with how, you know, Gonzalo has handled the team, like the man management, quote unquote, you know, the arm around the shoulder type of guy of the team, and whether that makes an impact. But as far as the performance goes, I totally agree with you. I mean, I knew that it was going to kind of hit this weird boiling point when you have you know, you tune in for 2 hours and you don't see a ball hit the back of the net, especially when you think you should win. You are the better team. You showed you were the better team in the game. You played better than the other team, but you don't get the result. It always leaves a fan, I think, you know, rightfully feeling frustrated. But I think our jobs is to come on here and tell them that they're wrong.
Right. You're allowed to be sad. I'm not trying to invalidate anyone's feelings about a draw, right? Like, you want to win. I get it. But, you know, if we're talking about what this means for the future of this team, a game where you go on the road in MLS. I'll agree with Dax, who said exactly this. He said it doesn't matter who you play in MLS on the road. It doesn't matter what happened in the previous game. A road game is a really tough game in MLS, no matter what. And you go on the road and, you know, you don't dominate, but you are in control of the entire thing. It never felt out of control. It never felt like things were slipping for Atlanta United, despite starting Efren Morales in his first game. And we can talk about Efren in a bit. I thought he did a really nice job for what he was asked to do. Despite all these things, Atlanta was in control, and by the end of it had created multiple clear-cut chances that just didn't go in because Chris Brady had a heck of a night. That's kind of all you can ask for on the road, to be totally honest. Yeah, it wasn't perfect. I mean, there were a lot of moments where I was getting frustrated, where there were just misplayed passes or just things that weren't sharp or people just ignoring space, people in space, and ignoring passes that could have gone out wide and really kind of exploited some weak areas for Chicago. But overall, they did what you're supposed to do on the road in MLS to get a result, and it just didn't happen quite as well as you would have wanted. And again, it goes back to the fact that, like, we're 9 games in to this season, and as an incredibly small sample size for MLS. It's about the sample size where predictive metrics start to work out, though, and Atlanta's doing really well there. The results are not great. I'm not going to pretend they are, but, you know, it's so early. Like, you win 2 games, and all of a sudden you're right back near the top near the supporters' shield standings, right? Like,
yeah.
I just keep imagining what it would have been like if they just hadn't had those 2 back passes, because everyone would be talking about this team in a supporters' shield context. I mean, it's that easy to switch things in MLS.
Yeah. Yeah, if they don't lose those leads, look what Atlanta United has done without Stian Gregersen for most of the year so far. Was he? Mm-hmm. He played 3 games, right? 3 yep. 3 of 9 games, I believe, for Atlanta United.
They allowed
so
1
far.
Goal in those games.
It's not very many. Yeah. I just got done watching the match on doublespeed. And it's actually shocking how in control Atlanta was in the game. The few chances that Chicago had going forward were typically created from just Atlanta sloppy passing or something like that. Like, Atlanta was not ever really getting outplayed in the game, hardly at all. Like, I can't really remember any, you know, extended moments where they were kind of under pressure from Chicago. And, you know, it is, to go back to the Gonzalo Pineda point, it's toxic to be talking about changing your manager out in April. Like, I don't care what your record is, really. Like, it's just like, it's not a healthy way to live as a fan. But also, you know, as far as trying to exert pressure on the team and whatnot to, like, potentially make a change or something, it's just, It's just, it's April, you know, and you would say the same thing in baseball. Like, these are kind of synonymous, mm-hmm. like the seasons of baseball and MLS, just because they literally do span kind of the same lengths of time over the calendar. And, you know, obviously the actual amounts of games are fewer in MLS, but it is a long slog, just like the Major League Baseball season is. And you just got to have a little bit of patience and hope that things, you know, again, level out. If you look back to not the year where Atlanta won the World Series, the Braves, but the next year, I think it was, they were, or maybe it was the World Series. No, I think it was the next year. They were really struggling, and then they played like a series in Colorado and were incredible, like from there on out for the next 5 months, whatever it was. So, right. That I think that's still very possible for this Atlanta United team, because they've been doing a lot of this without some of their best players. You know, mm-hmm. Yako's just come back into the squad, but he's also missed a bunch of time. And to get to the center back's point, and I do want to talk positively about Efren Morales, because he definitely mm-hmm. deserves it. That was a great performance, and I am so happy that he went in there and gave that after he was not selected by Gonzalo Pineda to come in the previous game, where Ronald Hernandez was selected to go in at center
back. Which, real quick, I think any yep. criticism of that is just bizarre to me. You're not going to throw a kid into yeah. his first MLS game with, like, yeah. it was literally 20 seconds of notice. I'm not
right.
kidding.
Right,
for Ronald
right.
Hernandez to go into that last game. Not the situation to put in the kid into his first game.
Yeah, I think it's actually probably a credit to Gonzalo to understand in that moment that it would have been a bad situation for Morales to go into. And if you put him in a bad situation, he has a bad game, are you even able to select him for this game to start, you know, with that kind of emotional mm-hmm. cloud hanging over? I don't know. And so I think that was, in retrospect, probably a wise decision, even if it was kind of had the potential for what ended up happening in that right. game, as far as Ronald goes. But I did feel like, you know, I just want to impress upon people the importance that Stian Gregersen actually plays in this team, because I think what we saw in the first three games of the season was Atlanta being able to better play on that kind of knife's edge that's a little dangerous, where you're really kind of putting numbers forward and you don't have as many players to defend, and you're not maybe as much in quote-unquote control. But it's this idea that our friend Teoto Football has written about on his blog, and about this, the ability to, like, for teams to ratchet up the volatility meter or to lower it down when they're mm-hmm. when they have a lead, but to be able to kind of ratchet that up and down as it's appropriate for the team, whether when they're trying to go out and score a goal. And it's just a lot harder to do that when you're playing with backup center backs, where they need the game to kind of be in control. They can't be kind of running all over the place, putting out fires like a player like Stian Gregersen can. And even Derek Williams has the ability to, you know, the smarts and the know-how to be able to do that kind of stuff as well. So it's just something that the team is having to work through right now. Even though they didn't give up goals, which is great, that's obviously the first priority, it's still not the ideal partnership to have back there, because you just don't have quite the level of physical ability, or just, you know, the professional expertise to be able to navigate your way through some things that happen in matches. But overall, I can't complain for that reason, because you basically got what you could have out of those players, and you should have gotten the result. It ended up not going your way.
Agreed. And to talk about that a bit more and what that does tactically, I mean, essentially it keeps you from getting out of your shape a little more comfortably, right? Mm-hmm. So these moments where maybe Brooks can get forward, where Caleb can get forward, where even some of the folks in the double pivot can get forward, those don't happen quite as much, because you have to be a little more hesitant to get up the field and potentially risk a young center back or a more inexperienced center back to keep them from, you know, being put in a really bad situation. And it slows everything down just a little bit. And even still, you know, Atlanta created plenty of chances in this one, despite, again, not being sharp on the ball and having some issues in the final third. Going back and watching the game, I was kind of amazed that Atlanta wasn't struggling as much as I remembered.
Same exact. That's when I was talking about it, watching it on double speed. I was kind of surprised at just how it played out, because, yeah, it seemed more kind of out of control when I was watching it the first time, or just, like, you know, mm-hmm. a little bit more random when I was watching it the first time.
And I think the frustration builds in these kind of games, because Atlanta is progressing the ball into the final third effectively. The tactics themselves are working fine against a setup for Chicago that was straight 4-4-2 mid block the entire time. Sometimes low block, right? Like they were 4-4-2, whatever line of confrontation we need to have, they were just going to do it and hold on for as long as they can and see if like Andrew Gutman could get forward and create some chaos, which he did a couple of times. Yeah, I miss him. Yeah. Right. Yeah. He was really good, but you know, it wasn't really effective in slowing down Atlanta United, right? And they were getting these ball into good positions and then missing on that final pass or just misplaying the ball or, you know, having some issues building down the left at times as well. But overall, they were working the ball into good spots, and that's why they're still at the top of the league and goals added differential, because they keep working the ball into good spots. And eventually, those kind of things pay off, creating, you know, 1.5 XG worth of chances usually is going to pay off. Having 1.73 post shot XG is usually going to pay off. All these things are things that indicate these results are repeatable. And we kept sawing that. So there were some issues I kind of hit at just a little bit ago with what was going on down the left side. Mm-hmm. And I think that's worth discussing. That, you know, for a team who loves to build down the left, and the reason they love to build down the left is because Thiago Amada is typically at his best when he's operating that left half space. Okay, that channel kind of in between the wing and between the middle of the pitch. You know, he drops into a pocket of space there. Atlanta creates overloads on the left side with Mamba, who poor Tristan got, his name got mangled and mispronounced in all sorts of ways in this game.
Oh, did it?
Oh, no. Yeah, it was remarkable.
I watched it on mute.
I think the Discord had it up to 20 different pronunciations of his last name in this game, and I'm not going to act like my Rinkin' Georgia ass has ever said it correctly, but right. it's still a little more effective than what this guy was doing. He had a tough night. I felt for him. but, you know, they're trying to build on the left, and it's not as crisp as it needs to be. There were moments where I thought Tyler, unfortunately, really struggled on the ball. Just, I think he's in a place right now where he's not being proactive within the game. He is reacting to everything and he's getting to things slowly, and he's not getting the spaces that he needs to get to a lot, which is what made him successful last year. He was able to be proactive and make these kind of runs that put him in the right spot and put him in positions to score goals that were sometimes just like mop up goals or tap in goals, but he was still actively trying to seek out the game, and that's not happening right now. For some reason, I'm not quite sure exactly why or how to explain it, but he's not been in his best. And it's why you see, like, you know, if you see Tristan or Saba or someone just throwing up their hands after Tyler doesn't make a run a few times the last couple of weeks, it's been that, right? They need him to be a little more proactive. Hmm. But anyway, it's causing issues down the left, and that's a critical part of Atlanta's buildup. And, you know, there might be some options we can talk about to fix that going forward, but I think the main thing is just, you probably just want Shonde back, but maybe there are some other tweaks, Joe, that they can do.
Yeah, I'd like to see how it looks when Shonde comes back. Obviously, he's been back, but seems like he wasn't at quite 100%. So I would like to see that. But yeah, I mean, I guess Rob put the idea out there, Rob Busry, to potentially move Almada to that left wing, and then maybe you move Tristan a little bit more advanced into that, you know, central attacking playmaker role, and then you slide maybe someone like Dax in to the starting lineup to play in that pivot, which sounds like a good idea because Dax was great in this game. He was talk about him a little
amazing.
Bit more individually later. Yeah, but I actually I'm quite intrigued at that, and it just seems like with Almada, they need to. I feel like they could be served well to just change things up with him. Just, you know. Even if it's not, if you know it's not something you want to do long term, maybe you just, you know, you throw a wrinkle in and play him on the wing and just see how it goes, you know, just see what happens.
And playing him on the wing doesn't mean like, oh, he has feet on chalk the entire time or anything
right,
like that.
Right.
Look at what New England has done with Carlos Hill.
Yeah, exactly.
At times, or straight out of a 4-2-3-1, too. It wouldn't be too much different than that. You put him on the wing, you have him drift into some of the similar half spaces. You know, you could even put him on the right. I kind of like having Saba on the left anyway, to be totally honest. I think when you talk about that just being something to continue going forward, because he is effective on the ball. And I get that you want him isolated out on the right to kind of wreak havoc whenever he does get the ball. But right now, I think you need him in that build-up area. It's just a thought. I don't know if it would work perfectly. It's just a thought. But having him on the left and having a little more solidity in midfield wouldn't necessarily be the worst thing. I do kind of worry about Tristan's creative ability sometimes. Yeah. He does have a decent ball in his bag. If you go back and watch some of the tactical notes I had on the Cincinnati game, he had a couple balls that were excellent that didn't turn out into big chances, unfortunately. But he maybe isn't quite creative enough, but it's something to consider potentially. It could be there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that just in general, I think it would perhaps be wise by Gonzalo Pineda to just do, if it's not this what we're describing, maybe it's something. Maybe it is more Saba on the left instead of the right, or just something like that, because it does feel like it's been like a very similar lineup outside of the changes you've had to make because of injury, but it's been very similar tactically game to game. And I'm sure that one of the reasons is you do want to establish something that is like your fastball, you know, that you can just go to when you need it down the stretch of the season, and really ingrain that in the players' minds, especially with a lot of new players coming into this first team, especially right, you know, in midfield with players like Salish and everything. But yeah, I would definitely be up for a lineup that comes out before a game, or maybe you wouldn't even be evident by the starting lineup because it's probably the similar names, but just to see guys in some different spots. And Almada's a player who's played on the left before when he played at Velez. He kind of played all over. In fact, Carlos Bocanegra kind of touted him as being able to even play striker if needed. He hasn't done so much of that here in Atlanta, but it seems like he has really kind of played in that roaming playmaker role in the middle for almost every game that in which he's played here. And I would like to see him maybe used a little bit differently because the stats are down, you know, his numbers are down too. He could use a little jolt, I think.
Yeah. We can go over this right quick right now. Through about 720 minutes, I believe Thiago, 2 goals, 1 assist. That's not production that we've come to expect from him. The underlying numbers aren't super great. They're fine. 0.46 non-penalty XG plus expected assist per 90. I have to put that in context. That's right in between Sam Adeniran and St. Louis and Cincinnati's Corey Baird. If you are asking yourself, who is that? That should tell you kind of where we're talking about
the
tier of Thiago Almada right now. Last year, he was 0.67 non-penalty XG plus expected assist per 90, right? So like basically 0.67 goal contributions, goal chance creations, whatever you want to call it, right? Per 90. That was like 8th in the league, 7th in the league, something like that. It was very, very high up there. And obviously the production reflected that. So yeah, struggling a little bit.
And again, to make a cross-sport comparison, I remember the Falcons in 2022 when I was covering them, their defensive coordinator, Dean Pease, told us one of the games toward the end of the season, they blitzed a ton. And he was asked, you know, like, why were you blitzing so much in this game? You guys hardly blitz. Why, like, what were you seeing? Like, was this tactically, you know, especially for this game or whatever? And he's like, no, actually the reason why is because I felt like the players were bored and we needed to like just spice things up. And he told, he's like, so we were like, you know what, we're just going to blitz the crap out of these guys. And the players loved it. You know, like they got into it and during the week when they were getting excited for it, you know, cause they knew we were going to have this crazy game plan. And, it was literally more than anything. It was just about shaking things up and about kind of creating a different vibe in the training sessions. And it feels like it's getting to that point. Again, Atlanta United is controlling these games, but it feels like they're just missing that extra little bit that can actually push them over the edge to really start creating clear-cut chances inside the box.
Yeah, some slight changes can have that effect. At the same time, you hear coaches like Wilfred Nantse talk about how they don't want to get away from their style too much. Mm-hmm. You want to implement your style and not have to even really worry about what the other team is doing. You know, when mm-hmm. Columbus goes and faces Monterrey, you know, they aren't going to change things up because they have the confidence and belief in their style. You know, so there is kind of like a fine line to walk between, like, okay, what do I change and how do I make sure that everyone is sticking to our principles and still having that level of belief? So maybe that's why you may not see a big change like that, like moving Thiago out of the 10 and shifting him to the wing. But, you know, I think it's worth exploring at the very least, right?
Yeah.
Probably can't
because, hurt. Because the other thing with Thiago, and this is just my opinion, but when I watch, it's he seems more frustrated at times during games than I remember him being in the past. It feels like teams have a better idea of how to kind of neuter his ability to, mm-hmm. you know, pull off these magical moments and unlock the game a little bit. So it seems like something like that could, you know, doing a slight tweak might just be enjoyable for him, first of all, but sure. also just kind of help give teams a different look just so they have to be prepared for it. Maybe that opens up more things. And when it comes back to like having your own style, I think when this team has all its pieces healthy and in the lineup, I do think that that is their best route forward. I think for me, it's just more mm-hmm. in this moment where you're missing your left winger, you know, you're playing with backup center backs. Maybe this is the time where you maybe throw a curveball in there.
Yeah, I don't disagree. At the same time, Joe Patrick, we were talking about Thiago and kind of a negative light there, and I think he had 0.73 expected assist in this one and a couple of clear cut chances that, you know, again, Chris Brady makes an incredible save. It wasn't like he was completely devoid of production in this one, but there were obviously moments where you could see him make the wrong choice, make the wrong pass, not get the ball to Yurgos's feet when he should have, not see the wide player in space, you know, and that was frustrating. And it's kind of felt like that for most of the year, when you have a player like Almada who, you know, is typically first, second, or third in usage rate, touch rate, whatever you want to call it, touch percentage. Mm-hmm. He's essentially taking a higher percentage of the team's touches than basically any other player in the league. When you have a player like that who makes your attack, to use O'Doyle-ism, heliocentric, right, where it revolves around him so much, if he is not firing at 100%, then you slow down. You slow down. That doesn't make it a bad strategy. Like,
right.
Really? Like, y'all are going to complain about relying on Thiago Almada? It seems like a good idea to me. But
yeah,
it can falter when it's not clicking at the level that we come to expect from him. At the same time, Joe, I want to point out, he is averaging 0.20 goals added per 90. And that's kind of right around like all-star MVP level. Right, he's right there with Ricky Pooch. He's ahead of Denny Bawanga. He's tied fifth in the league. That tells me he's getting the ball into good positions. It's just the final product hasn't quite been there.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. Yeah, definitely.
And again, like, the tactics help them get into good positions, guys. I don't know what you want them to change tactically. I really don't.
Yeah. The stuff for calling for a manager, to me, that's just it's almost indicative of that person is just having an emotional outburst. Like, they're just having an emotional response to what is legitimately a very frustrating result, frustrating game to watch. This one in particular, you know, being 0-0, and you know, the last couple of games where they've had leads and blown them. I understand why these things are frustrating for sure.
Yeah, but they don't have to have like a clear explanation. Sometimes things just happen because it's soccer. And you are using your feet to direct the ball, you know, you don't have a whole lot of control over it, no matter what you think.
Soccer is probably the sport that has the least explanation, clear explanations for these things happening. Like honestly, in other sports, it's almost more. You can almost put a finer point on it on other sports because they start from set plays and things. And yeah, soccer is just weird. A lot of randomness. You know what I was loving in this game, though, outside of the result and all that?
Tell me, Joe.
Dax McCarty.
Yeah, so our take about subbing him in the Cincinnati game, that came good real quick, didn't it?
Yeah, he was creating chances with his tackles. I mean, he was all over the place. To me, it looked like a player who wanted to make an impression on the manager, honestly.
He came out with an intensity. There was a moment, I think maybe his first touch, where he let the ball run, dummied it, and kind of let it run across him and flipped the field in midfield. And it was just like such an energetic moment that put so much life into everything. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Dax is feeling it a little bit. And, you know, there were even a moment where, gosh, he was so close to putting someone in on goal, but like had so many good options. He almost couldn't make a choice.
Yeah.
Right. There were guys wide of him on either side of the 18 that he could have played in potentially. And instead he just kind of ran right up the middle and got the lost the ball at the top of the 18. But still, I thought it was an excellent performance. And I just want to remind folks, man, he was a genuine piece for a Nashville team that made it all the way to the Leagues Cup final last year and beat Monterey last year. I mean, he was playing a critical role and essentially at the base of a diamond for them, and is still in a starting caliber MLS player. And it's been odd to see him not used as much. Yeah. If I'm going to disagree with Gonzalo Pineda on anything, it's not going to be like a tactical thing or anything like that. I think this has been absolutely fine. And I can see on rewatch over and over again where things are working out effectively based on the game model. Some personnel choices like that, I'm going to argue with.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here. And it's hard to envision Jay Fortune, as much as I like Jay Fortune, and clearly Gonzalo loves Jay Fortune, hard to envision Jay Fortune coming into a game and making that kind of an impact. And to me, it's only a veteran player could come on and have the kind of confidence and know-how to be able to do some of the things that Dax was doing in that game. And I think, frankly, it's something that you can never have enough of on an MLS field, that kind of experience. And I think it's why we called for him. We said he should have come on earlier in the team's last game when Rollins Hernandez was out there. I would hold to that opinion. I think he would have given you a little bit more solidity. I don't know if he actually, you know, helps prevent the goal in the sequence that ended up happening. But, man, it was great to see. And it will be very interesting to see if that performance does start to change some things for him going forward in the squad. Because, you know, sometimes managers, they have an opinion, you know, that's formed, and they have a very close look at things in training. But then you put them in a game context and things can look differently. And I'm trying to think, there was a player. Was it Laurentiewicz under the Tata? I mean, obviously Jeff was, well, no, he didn't start in the opening game. It was Julian Gressel who started in central midfield. Mm-hmm. I think Jeff talked to us about this, how he kind of had to make an impression on Tata, and then he got some opportunities to play in games and establish that. And it was at that point where Tata really started to trust him, because he got to just see him in a different light, I guess. Mm-hmm. And hopefully Dax can have that same opportunity here.
Yeah, and it could be too that he's with a new team and it just takes a while to get comfortable. And yeah, maybe definitely. We're not seeing that in the day-to-day. It's totally possible, but you know what? I think now we have the data points to say, okay, look, like, this is a quality piece that you can put in key situations and trust to do a job well. It's not that Jay can't, and I think there's value in playing the kids and developing young players. It just, you kind of have to pick your spots a little more, right? And that's what we talk about when we talk about our 9+2, 8+3 frameworks, where you want to have young kids played in positions where, you know, they're not surrounded by people who are also inexperienced.
Right, right.
And that's where the sub last week kind of came into play, where it's like, well, that kind of just added more inexperience out on the field. Mm-hmm. Right? That's not a knock against Jay. It's just where he's at in his career.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right? Yep.
Joe, speaking of people who are young and at a new stage of their career, Evan Morales was totally fine. And I thought that was great.
He's fantastic. I mean, well, yeah, he was great. He was fine. He was good. It was everything you could have hoped for from him. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, you saw the lineup come out, Joe. I had a feeling of dread.
Exactly.
In my stomach when I saw that, to be totally honest. I was like, well, that's kind of a bummer because we didn't have any data points on him.
I was worried about Noah Cobb because, and you know, I think the commentator in the game, I did have it on in the beginning, and I think there was a question as to whether the migraine thing had come up, and then I think someone got him a note saying that, you know, this was just an illness that he was having that is the reason why. It seemed not related to the migraine.
Yeah, no, not related, I don't think. Gonzalo Pineda talked about it after the game and said basically, Noah just looked like crap.
Yeah.
And that's paraphrasing on my part. He just didn't look super.
He did not look fine. I think that was the quote.
Yeah. So Noah wanted the play. I think it was smart to hold him out in this. And, you know, Efren has a little bit more time to prepare mentally, understands the role a little bit, and does a really solid job. I mean, it's fair to wonder. You know, he's been playing with a twos team that hasn't been super effective defensively the last few weeks, you know.
Yeah.
He's been at strange stages of his development. It was honestly kind of a surprise when Atlanta picked up his contract again. this year, just because he hasn't had much playing time, you know, and to see him come in and be put in a situation that wasn't necessarily the most comfortable situation and do the job was great. Yeah, there was a moment right at the beginning. It's the shot that goes off the crossbar where I think he's probably got to do better with that. It was a tough play, but that's one of those you would hope your center back would get in front of near post and keep that ball from running past them. But other than that, I can't really think of moments where he had major issues. There was apparently some disorganization in the back line that the broadcaster kept talking about, but I didn't really see it on rewatch. I didn't really notice it at all on rewatch, to be totally honest. And you know, he almost gets the goal at the end of the game as well. We were so close to just a high vibes moment that would have saved this podcast from being a complaining fest for the entire time.
Could have saved Gonzalo Pineda's job in some people's eyes if he makes that. Yeah. What a great story, too, of a guy who's been with Atlanta United since he was 11 years old. I love that we're getting to the stage now in this club's history where there are people like that. And hell, at this point, there's probably people who are there even younger. And, you know, at 20 years old now, making his league debut after a ton of twos games, obviously academy games and all that. Yeah, it's great to see. And who knows, maybe that performance kind of shows them something and he continues to grow with this team. I mean, he certainly looked like, you know, backup caliber. Honestly, you couldn't really tell that much of a difference between him and Abram. Like, they seemed about the same in terms of their like competence out there. Too.
He's been doing well in moments where he's had to step up and, you know, in this case especially had to be a leader on the back line. Did fine. Fine. So, I mean, I think you can say Atlanta, maybe five deep at center back is a bit of a stretch, but you can comfortably rely on five people and for a game at least. And that's pretty good depth in MLS. Yeah. That's good to have. That's good to know.
Yeah. They've definitely been stress tested at this point. My goodness.
Good news is Stian Gregersen should be back. I would imagine. Yeah. I'm going to guess he starts sooner rather than later. He has been in training. He's getting back to it. It's a slow process, right? They're not going to rush him in an MLS season, but I would bet either this game or next game, he's back in the starting lineup.
I wonder if they had a lead in this game, if he would have come on at any point to as like a third center back or something like that. Just late, but just to give you a little bit of a run out before you get thrown into a start. But yeah, I would definitely expect him to be starting here relatively soon. Obviously, he makes the match day squad. It's kind of step one or maybe step two or three in the process, I guess, to getting back. But I don't think he's that many steps away from basically being back in the starting lineup. And that will be great. And that'll be great for this team. I think the question that I would have now at this point is, who's he coming in for? You know, I think it's a more open question than it might seem on its face. Just because, I mean, I don't think I'm crazy for saying this. Like, if you're not seeing much of a difference between Abram and Morales, you'd presumably want to have your own homegrown kid who's younger, who's got more potential out there to play alongside him. Ultimately, I don't think that's the way they'll go because I think they'll want to err on the side of more experience and all that, like we were talking about earlier. But, good to see all these guys getting some playing time.
I think Luis has been fine. He's left-footed, too, which helps a little bit. It's
true. He would be the guy on the left side.
So I think that's the future. If there is any kind of, well, there will be changes, but that's probably where we're heading is Gregersen and Abram, if I had to guess. But that doesn't take away from the fact that two young guys had their opportunities and did really, really well with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Credit to like everybody in the developmental process and the path there too, to get those players ready to go. It's not just the head coach, you know, it's a lot of the assistant coaches currently with the first team, but it's also coaches that he's had in the past that have helped him get to this point.
Joe Patrick, another person coming back from injury. Gigi starts in this one and didn't quite look himself, I don't think. There was a moment. There was a moment where he was close to being onside. He wasn't onside. I have the tactical print cam to prove it. I know they didn't show a good angle on the broadcast like at all, but the tactical cam show was pretty clearly offside. Yeah. But it was close. It was tight. And, you know, he gets in on goal. Eventually, the ball redeflects to Tyler Wolf and he scores, but Gigi had some decent moments, but I just didn't look completely sharp. And this one, that's going to take some time to get him back to full speed, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's just one of those things. I think when you've missed time, I think it's just like that. But I mean, I've got no long-term concerns or anything like that. I did notice he was, you know, dropping in a little bit when they were trying to do their build up, which still seems to be something that's happening. I guess it's just going to be that way. It's probably right. I mean, you need some movement. You need your striker to move around a little bit. You need to, you know, make your opposition track you around, try to pull people out of their organization. So I get it, but
yeah,
it just didn't seem, I would say, like, it wasn't just him. Like, I think it was just the whole attack was just kind of a little bit, not quite sharp enough again, and just didn't kind of have that final precision that you want.
Right. And some days that just happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you are putting yourself in good positions over and over again, you're still going to create, what was it, 1.73 post shot XG, even when you're not at your best. That's the sign of a pretty good team. It's also the sign of a pretty...
He'll have to score two next game just to make up for it.
It's also the sign of a pretty good team when you can roll out your basically third string striker and have him look the part of a first string guy.
Yeah.
Daniel Rios is a dude. Like, I love what he offers. Yeah.
Every appearance he's made so far, I'm like, damn, this guy is impressive. Like, he honestly, he's better than a lot of backup strikers this team has had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm trying, even like, you know, Ronaldo Cisneros is like an easy kind of comparison to draw because they, you know, acquired from the same league at kind of around the same time of the year. And he's like night and day better than Ronaldo Cisneros.
There's levels to this.
Like, it's not even close.
He had a great moment where he switched play out wide dropping back, and he's done a better job than any of the strikers, I think, at dropping back and then being on the ball.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think he's their best like link-up striker, for sure.
And then, of course, he has the moment right at the end of the game that, man, I don't know how that header didn't go in. Another great save from Chris Brady. It's like it's a huge, huge chance for Atlanta United that, you know, header doesn't go in. Sometimes ball don't go in.
Yeah.
Joe Patrick, it's tough out here. It's tough out here. But Joe Patrick, your life can be a little less tough. If you go listen to the music of Kurt Castle, his song Chances is our theme song, if you will.
Thank you, Kurt.
Go check it out wherever you check out music. Go check out all of Kurt's stuff right over there. Thanks to our friends at Lucid FC for powering this episode.
Thank you, Lucid.
Some of the best streetwear you'll ever come across over
LucidFC.us.
That place. Super cool stuff. Always going up there. We appreciate their partnership. They have a brick and mortar over in the other side of Atlanta and
over yonder
and plenty of stuff you can check out on their online shop as well, thanks to Lucid FC. And if you haven't already, Joe Patrick, you've checked it out, but maybe the people haven't. Y'all gotta go check out 5strikefinal.com, where we're posting all sorts of articles, all sorts of interviews, all sorts of things throughout the year. We got some good stuff coming to y'all in the next few days.
We're chatting constantly in the Discord. It's just a community there that's growing, and maybe the best part of the Discord is you get to ask us some questions and listen to the answers.
We should do that right now, Joe Patrick. El Habro says, would this have felt better if it was a 1-1 come from behind draw? I would have actually complained.